Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, joined by Bill D'Alessandro, you know him well. He's a longtime co-host. He is the co-host of the Acquisitions Anonymous podcast, the number one show on the internet for buying and selling companies. Also, until recently, was the CEO and owner of Natural Dog Company. If you've been listening, you know that he recently sold that. And yeah, someone I always love having on the show to spitball stuff. Bill, welcome, sir.
Glad to be back. I'm very honored to still be invited to the E-commerce Fuel podcast, despite having sold my e-commerce business.
I'm not like Steve Chu. I'm not like, oh, you know, you sold day three, I cut you off from my life. Just need to see his MO.
How long do I have then? Is there a tail? It's just longer?
Oh, you have 100 days and we still, you're at 90? So we've got another month. We got at least one more podcast.
Okay. I got another couple weeks to start another e-com business, I guess, and still be invited to the podcast.
Yeah. But with AI, you can spin that up in like
an afternoon.
You get tons of time here.
So. Yeah. I'm thinking I will probably do like maybe seat back organizers for SUVs. Ooh. Is the thing. It's my big hot idea.
Make sure you do them for people who want like paper maps. I heard that is a very small but passionate niche out there in the world.
Yes.
Anyone who doesn't get that joke, that was a not well destined foray I had at one point in the e-commerce world, but still loved making something. Bill, we got about 30 minutes to go through a bunch of stuff. But in 60 seconds, quickly, how's your summer been?
Summer has been great. Sold my business almost 90 days ago. So have been working at the acquirer for the last 30 days. Good people. And, you know, it's kind of fun to work in a bigger organization. But my role is very different. I'm not CEO anymore. So I'm having to kind of adapt to what that is like, not having the buck stop with me. I was on a call with the folks, the private equity firm that owns us and the CEO of our acquirer. And man, they had a lot of hard questions for her and they weren't pointed at me. And I was like, this is a change. You know, it's like, I'm used to be the one getting melted when you're the CEO. And so it was very, very different to just be in listen mode.
Did you make sure to mute Zoom when you cracked the beer and you were leaning back and just kind of listening? Like, hopefully it'd be really awkward if you didn't.
Yeah, no, it's been good, but I've had a nice summer, significantly lower pressure than being the CEO of a business.
No, that's awesome. I mean, timing-wise, that's perfect. You're selling, and it's beautiful timing. Well, cool. Okay, like I said, we got just a few minutes to go through stuff, but I wanted to get three or four things I want to chat through on kind of this edition of State of Play, which still needs to be renamed because, as you said, it's kind of a bad name. But the first one is AI stuff. I'm curious, Bill, how much you've been playing with AI. People listening last week probably caught the gap year wrap-up podcast I did with my wife, Annie, as we kind of reflect on the gap year and back in Montana now in Bozeman and starting to crank into stuff. Anyway, I spent a lot of time yesterday diving deep on AI and a lot of things that I've wanted to, like really understand the landscape, a lot of the acronyms, how things tie together. Today, I was using Replit to try to build a dashboard for something. And I was, Bill, you like this home automation stuff. I know you're a home automation geek. I was trying to build out a home assistant server. So for the first time in quite a while, I was like on the command line chatting with ChatGPT and then Replit and going back and forth. Anyway, what I'm curious what you've been playing with, if you've been playing with it much. And the things, there's a lot of things we could dive into, but the things that struck me are, one, even being gone just, you know, on the road for 6 weeks, the amount of stuff that I feel like I had to catch up on was mind-boggling. Two, I probably had a 2-hour chat session with ChatGPT just to understand the different types of apps. There's like five or six categories of different. You've got LLMs, you've got the code things, you've got, you know, MCP servers, you've got more automation tools like N8N. There's like half a dozen different categories of AI tools. And it's Replit is amazing. Like, do the ability, I don't know if you've played with any of these much, Replit Cursor, but it is. From someone who used to program, I know you did too, the ability to just sit through, talk, tell you what you want, get a UI up in 5 or 10 minutes, have it start putting stuff together is phenomenal. So I guess all this to say in a slightly long-winded way, it's fun to dive back in. It's mind-boggling the pace at which things are changing. And I also, as much power as you have, I almost wonder too, like if because there's so much complexity that it almost creates a world where yes, we're more efficient, but it's so exhausting to try to keep up on everything. Anyway, that was a lot to throw at you, but I'll just kind of...
It is very exhausting to keep up with everything in AI. It changes. It could be a full-time job just to keep up with it. I've played with Lovable some, which is like the dumbed down version of Replit or of Cursor. It's basically just prompts and you don't really get into the code at all. But it's like pure vibe coding, as the kids say. I was able to build like a little, so, you know, we have our podcast and we have sponsors for the podcast. I wanted a little calendar of when they all renewed. So it's hooked up to Stripe, and I was able to, in Lovable, vibe code without touching any code at all. Now it helps that I know how to code, so I kind of knew what I was asking for and I could spec it out very well. But a web app that connects to the Stripe API ingests all of our subscriptions from Stripe and then publishes an iCal feed that I could subscribe to with all of the next renewal dates of all of the subscriptions. And it's live. Anyone can use it. It's mrrcal.com, monthly recurring revenue cal.com. And it works. And I use it and it's like really nice. And I built that in like an afternoon. So it was cool.
That's really cool. What was it? Lovable? That's the name of the app?
Lovable. Yeah. Lovable.dev.
Interesting. Very cool. Have you dove into N8N or any other AI tools very much?
So there's a lot. I see a lot of people writing about N8N, and I'm like, this is Zapier. Zapier has a ton of AI integration. I mean, they have an open AI connector. Like, you can do, I think, almost all of this stuff that people are talking about doing in N8N, you can do in Zapier. But N8N, I think, makes these like really pretty looking diagrams that look good on Twitter. And so I think people are all about it. But like, Zapier can do all this stuff.
Yeah, Zapier, and there's a whole category, kind of the automation side of things. I really want to go dive into one of the Microsoft Copilot or some of the other ones that are a little more built out for building full agents. I haven't done that yet, but that's next on the bucket list of things to do.
I just got the Comet browser from Perplexity, which is a little bit more agentic I'm playing with. Like, it can actually book flights for you. It can pay for things. It's look up the Perplexity's Comet browser. It's pretty neat.
Have you actually used it to book flights? Like, those are the kind of things where I'm sure we'll get there within the next year or two, or maybe even 6 months, where it's more commonplace. But I feel like now I would be a little hesitant to press the trigger, just given how I know that, you know, some things in AI are definitely, you know, 90% or less accuracy ratio.
Well, no, it like pulls it in and it says like, here's what I found. Here's what I'm about to do. Confirm.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
That is cool. The Comet like browser, you said, right?
It's called Comet, and you have to be a Perplexity Pro and you need an invite too. But a lot of people have it. You can get an invite. But it's like, you can also, if you got like a bunch of tabs open, like if you're like, you know, researching hotels or something, you can, all your tabs are the context. So you can say like, which of these hotels am I going to like the most? And it's going to read all the tabs and synthesize. So there's a lot of stuff. If you go to the Comet browser, there's like a bunch of examples of things it can do, because it now has the whole internet as its context, everything that you've looked at, all of your history, all the things you have open. You can say, like, if you have Gmail up in a tab, you can say, catch me up on all the emails from my team. And it'll pull them all out of Gmail and then write you a little thing. It's pretty cool. Because whereas like ChatGPT and stuff, you have to like try to connect it, because those are running on a server. This is running in your browser with all your cookies and all of, and access to everything that's on your screen.
And all the privacy people online have just probably been having full-on heart attacks over the last 12 to 18 months with the AI world. Cool. There's something we're working really heavily on right now. We actually hired a full-time AI person, not for in perpetuity, but for about a 3 to 6 month sprint here, someone who's really talented and doing some cool stuff behind the scenes for Ecom Fuel. So anyway, that's a topic for another episode. We'll dive into that, but that's been fun to do. So anyway, AI stuff. I wanted to chat as well about a couple of the forum threads this week that were interesting. There's a thread that got kicked off. You know, this is something like I almost feel a little weird bringing it up, because you don't want to sound douchey about it, but the topic was about, it's something I think is a real issue with entrepreneurs, especially once they start to have some success in their business. How do you navigate friends and family's reactions as income grows or as lifestyle changes or just things like that? And I thought that was interesting. There were some very different takes. I mean, some people's takes were, hey, don't make any apologies if you're, you know, having some financial success. Other people should just deal with it. If they have a problem with that, that's kind of on them. Other people, kind of more my take was, I think it's, in a perfect world, everyone would always be happy for you if you were doing better than they were. But I don't think that's how humans work. And I think it's especially difficult if other people are struggling financially. So it was very interesting seeing the different takes that people had. But I think that the one thing that's indisputable is like, if you are blessed enough to be able to have a business that grows financially, it does kind of open up some interesting and difficult at times questions about how it, you know, how it can impact, especially if you're not really intentional about it, your relationships with friends and family.
Yeah, it's, I think what it comes down to is every friend is going to be different. And also everybody is going to be different too. Every successful entrepreneur. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that, like, you know, making money doesn't change your relationship with money. You know, like my wife will buy, she buys some stuff at Walmart because it's cheaper and some stuff at Harris Teeter, the grocery store, like to save money on wheat bins because they're cheaper at Walmart, you know? And it's like just how she was raised, you know? And it, no amount of money is ever going to change that. I drive a Kia, you know, I'm not going to not drive a Kia. Like I'm not going to go, you know, buy Rolls Royce, you know? It just, I think you are who you are. And if people struggle with that, I think you should have an open conversation with them. But I think some people, you know, if people fall away, that's not your fault.
Yeah. I think it depends how you do. I think you were very, you hit the nail on the head when you said it depends, but on a person by person basis, right? Like one thing that I love, Bill, but you and I, we can have very candid discussions with each other about things. I know you're going to be happy for me. I'm going to be happy for you because, yeah, we share a lot of the same background. There's other friends I have had for years that I really don't bring up business at all or talk anything about it unless they ask. I try to downplay things just because I don't want that to impact the relationship. And I think that's one of the cool things too about a community like ECF is like you can get in there and if you have an amazing win that you want to share that you would never be able to tell with your non-entrepreneurial friends because the context would just be so off. You can get in there and kind of talk about it and because sometimes you need to. Like how hard is it if you sell a business and have an amazing day and you can only tell one person in the world or no one in the world, right? So yeah, I think that's another huge part of having a peer group that you can actually be open with.
Having a peer group is so important. And so I'm in ECF and I'm also in YPO. And YPO has been, you know, it's easier to do in an even smaller group. Like I have a forum in YPO of 7 guys. And we're totally open with each other about finances, about everything. And it's nowhere else in the world can I be that completely open about finances with people. And it's really helpful. There's this culture in America where you just don't talk about it. But in a small group, I think, you know, especially when you're forming a small group, like if you join a forum or you know, are making new friends and everybody's kind of on the same level, it's really freeing to be able to be open about money, but you kind of have to set that norm early. Otherwise it's weird.
Yeah. It's hugely freeing to do. Cause yeah, our society is so weird in that I don't know if it's an American thing or just a human thing. Yeah. I'm curious, but do you have any thought, like, are Americans just in particularly quiet about money in like a taboo way? Or do you think that's just, like
I have heard that it is, I don't know. I haven't done an exhaustive survey of global cultures around money, but I have heard that Americans are especially touchy about it. And I wonder if it's because so much of our culture is capitalist and so much of people's self-worth is tied up in their net worth. And it feels like a scoreboard in American society. And so people get very uncomfortable if they don't feel like their net worth lines up with their self-worth. I mean, I've heard other cultures are less this way. I mean, I know like we are the most capitalistic society on planet Earth, you know, maybe in the history of the world. So I've heard Americans are weirder about this than other people.
Hey, Andrew, here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Andy from HelloBatch.com, where they sell super high-end CBD products and partner with a local farm out of Wisconsin. Really great, fun, friendly guy. Was hanging out with him recently at an awesome event. And here's what Andy had to say about his experience with E-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
I think the coolest thing about ECF for me has been that the ways in which it's helpful has evolved. When I first joined, the most help and use I got was simply scrolling through the forums, reading about questions that I had that other people have already faced, and kind of just absorbing knowledge in the forum. As I've aged as a member, I'd say going to the events and building relationships with other community members in person has been the most valuable thing. I've actually ended up working with a few of them, and it's just such a great way to be like a filtering mechanism for awesome people to work with. For it to work in that way, you have to like go to these events, build the relationships, meet the people, but everyone is so great. I mean, it's just the best sense of camaraderie ever. And I can truly say that I think I've made some lifelong friends in ECF just being here a year and a half. So thank you, Andrew.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7 or 8 figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. Next thing I want to chat about, there's another discussion in the forums talking about one of our members cloned themselves with video, made a really kind of entertaining, I think they used Sora to, yeah, have themselves talk about a bunch of stuff and you know, make a video of themselves doing a bunch of things, which was funny. It's cool to see. Obviously, there's a lot of content applications you could do with that. But I'm curious, Bill, I mean, we're both podcasters, we're both marketers. We both just kind of drool at the thought of being able to automate things that take hours and hours a week or a day. Would you ever be comfortable using an AI version of yourself in video or voice to promote something? And like, or is it like a gray area? Maybe, maybe not. Like, how do you think about that? And I won't tip the scales. I'll chime in.
It's tough. I have been obviously tempted to create the audio model of my own voice. I have not done it because it really freaks me out. I mean, I'm sure you've seen all the scams where people do that and then they call your parents and they're like, "Mom, I'm in prison. Wire me this money." And it's your voice and it's very, very compelling. And not that I would lose control of it or anything, but it just, the idea of it weirds me out to do it to myself. But like, I've used some of the generic AI voices to read ad scripts or do voiceovers, things like that, but not of myself. I also find the idea weird that it could sound like me in tone and voice, but the words, you know, we all have like our speaking style, a writing style, the words that you use, the way you explain things, you know, and just because it's in my audio does not necessarily mean it sounds like me. I think we've both struggled and spent a lot of time trying to get AI to sound like us on the page, right? And I feel like in order to make a convincing facsimile of me with audio, first you've got to get it sound like me on the page.
We all write differently. If you ever meet someone in, you know, that you've emailed back and forth with, and then you meet them in real life and you're like, are you the same person I've been emailing with? Because some people kind of write and talk similarly, and some people are completely different in the written word versus the way they speak, which I think is interesting. Yeah, I think my take on this, I think video, I would be more likely to use some kind of AI version of myself in audio versus video. I think video is just kind of weird. Maybe it's just how bad it is right now. It's not bad, but it's not great. We don't have Will Smith. The Will Smith spaghetti thing has gotten better, but it's still not, you know, nowhere near flawless. I think the only times I would use it though is if I either had like a very short thing, like you've done this, Bill, where you've, let's say you record a podcast and at the very end you forget, oh my gosh, I forgot I needed to mention this little announcement or this little thing at the end. Potentially doing a, you know, it was inconvenient to go back and hop on the mic, maybe record a, you know, a 10, 15 second AI thing. Or if you did something with a disclaimer, but I think there's going to be so much AI content, you know, just spinning out over the, you know, in the coming months and years that's going to be a fast way to kind of lose some of your credibility and relate.
I mean, have you used Descript? You can do that already.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. with the transcript of a podcast, like that exists and that's handy, you know, to take out a, you know, stutter or to add something in, but other to like generate wholesale content, I'm not quite there yet personally, although the technology is pretty much almost there.
Yeah. Do you chat with ChatGPT very often? Like the voice mode, just sit down and talk to it?
I don't sit down. I usually go for a bike ride. So I was at the beach and I went for a bike ride with it on voice mode, talking about winners and losers in an AI economy. You know, we're not going to derail this podcast by speculating about what, you know, unlimited, unmetered intelligence is going to do to the Gini coefficient or things like that. But I was just chatting with it, like what types of sectors are going to win. Well, yeah, but you know, you said that earlier. I don't think that. What would you say? And it was very engaging. I mean, better than listening to a podcast.
Oh, so good. I have probably chat with it at least daily about different things. It's fun to do with my kids too when we're talking about something. And I'm surprised at how natural it sounds and how you kind of forget you're talking to a, you know, not to a human. The inflections, the light laughter, it's
that's
what's surprisingly
really
good.
Really uncanny. They've crossed uncanny valley in the pauses, the breathiness, the laughter, like that type of stuff is very convincing.
Yeah, I have a good friend who just last week I showed it to him, and he was kind of blown away in a slightly terrified way about how good. He was like, that's just all automated and robotic. And I was like, yeah. Yeah. It freaked him out a little bit.
Freaks me out a little bit. Yeah. If it's not freaking you out, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, no, it's true. All right. Last thing I was going to ask you about markets. Can never resist a chance to, you know, to spitball about public markets, investing, things like that. So as we sit here, you know, yesterday, I think the S&P hit an all-time high. And it's kind of wild because you look at what's going on with Trump tariff land, kind of back into, you know, Trump and EU and Canada tariffs and, you know, kind of the dealing with all those kind of issues again. Just from a knowing the state of business and being plugged into entrepreneurs, I don't have any data in front of me, but I don't feel like spending is especially strong right now. I could be wrong. You can fact check me here, Bill. Consumer confidence doesn't seem to be off the charts. And yet, like, the markets are at crazy all-time highs. I'm curious your take on this. I feel like one of my theories about why the markets are brushing this off and why they continue to just surge, even while valuations are really high. The biggest thing I wonder is if they just look down the road at, and not to make this entire podcast about AI, but if AI is going to come, and it already is, you hear companies, I can't remember what Fortune 100 company it was, that said that effectively they've replaced about, you know, half of their work is getting done by AI right now. And if you think about, like, what is AI going to do? It's going to remove a lot of jobs. It's going to streamline efficiency. Well, where is that efficiency going to go? It's going to go straight to the bottom line for a lot of companies. And I just wonder if we live in a world, and if a lot of market forecasters are saying, dude, corporate profits are just going to explode over the next 1 to 2 years. And that is kind of what's baked into the premium valuations. Anyway, kind of a curious time, and would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So this is some of the things I chat with ChatGPT about on my bike rides.
Of course. Actually, you think I just came up with this out of the blue. I have a feed so I can hear your whole ChatGPT history, and I just, you know, come up with questions that you're well-versed on already.
I'm talking to Andrew GPT right now in the synthetic voice. But yeah, so, I mean, I agree. Like, so consumer confidence is actually rebounding pretty dramatically over the last 30 days or so, but the market is priced to perfection at this. I mean, multiples across by any valuation metric. I mean, pick it. Any valuation metric is at all-time highs. So, you know, generally, if any valuation metric were at all-time highs, I mean, I'm talking like dot-com bubble all-time highs, like all-time highs, not just tech, but like broadly averaged across equity markets. You would expect, you know, everything to be really booming. And there are a lot of reasons to believe that, you know, I'm not saying things are terrible, but there's a lot of reasons to believe that things are at least a mixed bag right now. Right? So you have a mixed bag of economic data, a very mixed bag, especially as tariffs start to roll on over the next kind of quarter or two. Employment looks iffy, wage growth looks iffy. So you have sort of a mixed bag economic data and a all-time highs equity valuations. And to me, that feels incongruent. And it makes me nervous. Now, markets are forward-looking, of course. So to your point, maybe everybody thinks corporate profits are about to explode over the next year or two, and that historical multiples are not, you know, all-time high now is the new all-time low. And that, you know, companies are just going to be valued at intrinsically higher multiples forever going forward because they'll be that much more profitable. I'm not sure that's true. I think that may happen in the short term, but if everybody suddenly gets more profitable, like if everybody suddenly has less employees, like there's not some sort of magical price fixing. You know, the beauty of capitalism is that prices get competed down, right? Somebody, you know, everybody knows that all their other competitors' costs just halved and people start cutting price to win share, right? And that's how free market economies work, is that much of the gain accrues to consumers, which is awesome. So I don't know that just taking a bunch of cost out of company P&Ls leads to intrinsically permanently higher corporate profits. Maybe in the short term, but eventually those should get competed away.
Interesting. Now, is this your analysis or is this ChatGPT's analysis on the bike?
It's hard to tell anymore, Andrew.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. It's almost like the inverse, or maybe not the inverse, maybe the same thing as like the ad model for Facebook and Google, like the most brilliant you know, mosquito sucking source of profits in the world. It just everything.
Well, I mean, like, let's put an e-commerce lens, right? If suddenly everybody's cogs got cut in half, if all of your cogs and all your competitors' cogs got cut in half, right? Mm-hmm. What would happen tomorrow? You wouldn't make any more money. You would put it all into advertising on Facebook, Amazon, et cetera.
You would make more money for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it was. But the medium to long-term trend would be that everybody would start to say, okay, I have more margin. I can be more competitive. I can undercut other people, et cetera. So.
Right. But in the magical world, if everyone's cogs got cut in half on the same day and everyone knew it, it would not take 6 months. You know, people would immediately start pushing the bids right in the auction. Now, AI is different though, because it's not like that. Early adopters will enjoy super normal profits in the short to medium term. But as it diffuses, I think a huge portion of that has to accrue to the consumer. Now, none of them will be employed, so I don't know how they'll employ, afford anything. But, you know, I don't know that AI leads to structurally higher corporate profits in a free market capitalist system, which who knows, we end up with that permanently, you know, in new AI world.
No, I like that. That makes sense. And I agree with you. And that makes me rethink it. But what do you think is happening then? Like do you think people, traders, who, you know, whoever it is, the magic animal spirits of the market, they just believe my thesis that isn't quite as, you know, deeply fleshed out down the road as yours, which I think yours makes sense. Or why do you think, what explains, because it's very easy to say the market's not rational. And sometimes it is, like you look at the tech, you know, you look at bubbles. And maybe we're just in one right now. But oftentimes too, I think I was doing, one thing I love doing with ChatGPT is doing scenario planning, like asking questions. Like you and I think have talked about, hey, you just sold a business. Does it make more sense probabilistically to dump all the money in or to dollar cost average it in? And like, so I'll do a lot of what if scenario planning. And I feel like with ChatGPT, more often than not, even if you invested at high valuations, you still did reasonably well. Yes, there are bubbles, but oftentimes the market is smarter than we give it credit for. What do you think is why? What do you think the rationale is that's keeping things so high?
If I knew, I would be a lot richer. I mean, I truly don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand where. And that is why we talked on the last podcast. Hey, you're just going to cannonball your check from selling the business into the S&P 500, and that's why I told you it made me so nervous at the time. That was 6 to 7% ago. You know, in the S&P 500, right? 20% ago in Bitcoin or whatever. So I don't know shit, man. I'm not trying to sit here trying to say I know what's going to happen or even what's going on. But, you know, I do, I'm not the only one. Like a lot of people look at a mixed bag and maxed out valuations and go, one of these has to square. Either the economy's got to heat up to justify these, or the valuation's got to come down a little bit. And let me be clear, I don't think there's like a crash, oh my God, coming at all. But like we might need a moderation, you know, 10 to 20% moderation in valuations.
But we had a 20% moderation in valuations.
For 3 days.
Four or five months ago. We got that out of the system. We're good, Bill. We're good.
I don't know, man.
Last question, and feel free to say no comment. It's a perfectly acceptable answer. With the proceeds from your sale, you mentioned the last podcast, you were kind of thinking about what I do with this. Have you put anything to work, or have you just kind of been sitting tight and just not making any decisions and taking your time?
Lion's share treasury bills, which, the market's up 6 or 7%, but like, the market's up, but like my T-bill's been paying too. It's about risk reward, right? Investing is about risk reward. Like you can go to Vegas and double your money in a second, but you took a lot of risk, right? And that's not fair to say, you know, he made 100% and you only made 4%. It's like, well, yeah, treasuries and roulette are very different risk profiles, right? And good for you, but you could have also lost a lot of money as well. So I've been happy at least for the last 60 to 90 days in treasury bills. I've done a couple small investments. I invested with our mutual friend, Travis, in, I guess it's a little dark, but in an addiction clinic, which through his platform Capital Pad, which is like an SMB deal syndication platform. So I put a check into that. Unfortunately, I think is going to be a good business over the next decade or so. So like I've done like a few small private market things, but for the most part, treasuries and trying to figure out how to mitigate taxes.
Definitely good not to rush into that. And thanks for sharing. Bill, we're going to keep this one tight, wrap it up. If you are not listening to Bill over at Acquisitions Anonymous, make sure to check out that podcast wherever you get your podcast. A phenomenal show. They do it. It's a lot of fun hearing them, Bill and his co-hosts, kind of dissect deals and talk about what they think it are. It's a cool way to think about business and also your business as well. He's at Bill DA on Twitter. Bill, you still doing consulting? You do consulting as well. Any open spots, or if people want to learn
more
about that?
No open spots. But you go to BillDA.com and learn more about that, or ACQUAnon, which is Acquisitions Anonymous website. If you're into buying and selling small businesses, we do a lot of e-commerce businesses too on the show. And they're very tight, like 15, 20 minute episodes. So, you know, walk around the neighborhood once and you can fit one in. So we'd love to see you over there.
Yeah. If you get tired of talking to ChatGPT, it's a little refresher, you know, something a little more human to,
and I swear it's 100% human. It is very live, just like this episode.
Are you doing it? You don't know for your cohorts. Like you said, for me, you don't know for me. I could be just an AI bot.
You could be an AI video model. Well, you don't publish the video, but we publish the video. We're not afraid of our own faces over on Acquisitions Anonymous like you.
Oh, man. Brutal. Well, if people can see
it's proof of life. It's proof that we're not AI bots.
It's not proof. You can totally spoof the faces these days. Well, Bill, always love it. Thanks, man. Good to chat with you again, and looking forward to doing it again next time.
Thanks for having me on.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.